can bear.
With all due respect, and remember, I'm saying with all due respect, that idea ain't worth a velvet painting of a whale and a dolphin getting it on.
Welcome to episode 14 of Double Dodge. This one is called Altered Beastin, for reasons that will quickly become evident. How you doing, Campbell?
I'm here. I'm present.
Well, half the battle is showing up, right?
Exactly. The other half is rolling really well when you play.
Yeah. Indeed. And episode 14, we've been away for a little while. Life got in the way.
I like to think that we've just been doing a lot of behind-the-scenes work. We've been in the engine room, oiling things up, just making sure that the beast that is the Guild Ball in Australia and Adelaide Meta, we've just been doing some tuning, and now we're just pumping more out to the community.
Yes. Yes, no sexual innuendo intended. Oiling, no. Greasing, pumping.
There was a bit of lube involved, definitely.
Oh, man, you've got to make the machine work.
Yeah, exactly. It's got to be greased up, and yeah, and too much friction, not a good thing.
Not a good thing. Mm. Well, speaking of friction, thanks. That's a wonderful segue.
Nice.
We've got a fun episode lined up. We've got your good mate and my good mate, Steve Beastin Easton.
Yes. He's a champion. He does have two modes. He can go beast mode. He thought. He wanted to have a chat to us about a few things, one of which was some of the information that had been floating around on forums and the ideas that, you can be a special snowflake, or the people that don't like that idea. And we wanted to have a conversation about the tools that are available in Guild Ball that Steamforged have put in there for us, and how, sometimes common thought or isn't necessarily the best way to be going, that there are altered or other ways of playing the game.
Yes. Well, he was less charitable about it. He called it groupthink.
He did.
In true Beastin fashion, he just barreled through. But despite the superficial abrasiveness of his comments, there's a lot of good insight there. And he backs it up with some very decent tournament results as well. So,
yeah.
Well worth a listen. He talks about Masons a lot because he's been playing them and doing very well with them. And that chat bleeds into, I guess, the meta conversation about, the dominance of fish and alchemists. And I guess what sort of tools you can use to overcome these apparently invincible teams.
Yeah, absolutely. And and it's interesting because we've got a league running at the moment, and I chose engineers for that. And we do have a Carball episode at the end where I talk about some engineers, but I've experienced through them the fact that they do actually have those tools, and whether they're ahead of the meta or people just haven't understood them. But I've come to the realization they've actually got really good tools for countering some of these teams. Things from your vet velocities, your compounds, even Colossus. Tobias, our good mate Tobias Forward, shout out to him, we did a bit of dojo together about it, and there's a lot of tools there. So yeah, I don't think you can. My opinion is that you shouldn't just, follow the groupthink. There are tools in other guilds. Steve's shown it with the Masons, and I reckon we're slowly getting there with the engineers.
I mean, I like to draw an analogy to penis pumps. It's not going to get better if you don't use it.
No, exactly. It's just a waste of money at that point.
Erectile dysfunction's a real bitch, man. You want to get into it?
We've got one Steve Easton, CQ winner of 2016 inaugural Steamicon. Steve, how you going?
Really good. How are you guys doing today?
Yeah, good, mate. Campbell's like a glitch in the Matrix right now, but we'll make it work.
I am a glitch in the Matrix. I'm gonna mess with you guys. I'll be in and out. Thought we'd go on and talk about a few things to do with group. But initially, what we'll do on the podcast is we throw three questions at you. So I'm going to go to Dave. Dave, have you got three questions for Steve?
I do have three questions, Campbell. And the first question is, Steve, is there anything we should know?
Wow. What a broad topic that is. No. What do you want to know about?
I think your denial really says it all.
I'm a man in denial, that is true.
Well, it's not just a river in Egypt, apparently. Question number two. Would you care to comment on the rumours that are currently circulating the Guild Ball community that your aggressive playstyle has earned you the moniker Steve Beeston.
That's probably true. I do play quite aggressive when I play Guild Bullet in the style I play. But I'd like to think I'm quite a nice kind of guy to play. I'm quite chilled. Some people, when you play, they get really het up, but I think I'm quite chilled. Quite game-faced, though.
Right, right. Has there ever been a table flip in your Guild Ball career, in your gaming career?
Never a table flip, only maybe on Vassal when Vassal dice go a bit spazzy. But no, normally if I lose, it's because someone's played better than me, or I can pinpoint it down to a decision I made, or something just didn't go my way. So I'm normally pretty cool with it.
Do you have anything you'd like to say to the Vassal dice?
Fuck you. Vassal dice just suck. Seven dice, seven ones. That's just the way it goes.
Yeah, it's not a bug in the program. There's nothing wrong. It's all good. Nothing to see here.
I think Vassal was good in that it lets you try stuff out and it lets you play in different metas, but I wouldn't take the results too seriously. There's a lot of other factors when you're actually playing the game for real. Clock. There's that board space and understanding is actually very different. So it is a good training tool, but that's about it really, I think.
Yes.
Yeah. No,
look, man, I've taken shits with more consistent sets of numbers than Vassal Dice. Third question. It's our favourite question here on Double Dodge, Steve. Have you got anything you'd like to say to Alex Botts?
Who is Alex Botts?
That's not the first time we've heard that answer.
I'm in the UK and I have no idea who he is.
Right.
Never played him on Vassal. Never met him. Never spoken to him. You know, I hear he's a personality somewhere in America, but...
Yeah, yeah. He's also a technophobe, which is why you never see him on a computer.
Is he going to be at the WTC?
Yes, I think he will be, yeah.
Well, then we'll have to see what he's... see if I get to play him there.
My recommendation would be maybe wrestle him into submission. Don't take it to the table, man. Leave it all in the kiddie pool full of jello.
Is this for Cam's porn, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, man, Cam's a fiend for the porn. Seriously, at some point the doctor had to say to him, mate, you've only got so much skin.
That does sound sore, especially over there with that sun. Oof.
That concludes the quickfire question round, Steve. Thank you for playing. Prizes in the mail. Probably a good opportunity to move into the meat and potatoes of our conversation. You wanted to talk about groupthink in Guild Ball, and I think it's pretty interesting, pretty relevant conversation as we sort of, you know, season three beds itself down a little bit and patterns start to emerge. Did you want to just jump into why you maybe have some shit on your liver about it?
I go on the forums, just keep update on rules and see what people are saying and what... You know, kind of trend is, and I find it really frustrating, quite fairly toxic at the moment, and it has been for some time with like this groupthink ideology going on about certain things are broken or OP, the sky's falling, and it just frustrates me because I think it's clearly not the case. We had it in season two with Orbulus and Fillet, and while they were both really good, you didn't need to play them to win, and you know, it kind of was a self-perpetuating myth in a way. I think it's more so now in season three. You know, people are saying Fish and Alchemist are just too good and they're at the top of the curve. Masons are a shit. Marbles is the worst mascot in the game. You know, and it's that's why I've been playing different stuff, just to prove people that it's wrong.
Yeah, I hear you, man. When I think we have a similar approach in the sense that when somebody says something is shit, I feel compelled to work out for myself whether that is or is not in fact the case. And I know, like, when you and I first came across each other, you were playing Masons in one of Sanchez's Vassal tournaments, basically as a, you know, as a educational exercise for yourself and broader lessons could be drawn from that. Did you want to, like, throw some examples around as to, you know, where you feel that broad thinking about different teams and different models is being applied and doesn't necessarily bear out?
So... there are some teams that you have got a lower entry ceiling, as it were, to play or to do well with. So Fish would be a good example because you can load up Shark and he can get loads of stuff done. And because of the nature of scoring goals, it means that, you know, you can get ahead quite quickly. That doesn't mean that they're the best team. It just means that they're easier for some people to pick up, whereas Hunters, conversely, would be a much more unintuitive team to play. They've got some really good stuff and you know, and they've got some more releases coming out. Mason's another good example, really. The fact they've got a lot of synergy, you've got to be really positionally good to actually get the most out of them. So the ceiling to entry to play them is actually higher. But when you obviously get to a certain standard and you're playing any of these teams, they're all competitive. It's just the fact that people think, oh, well, this is an easy thing to go into it with a few changes because it's really point and click. Same as Obelisk last season with, you know, just loading him up on influence, Philip the same. You know, having a super solo captain doesn't, you know, doesn't necessarily mean the team's OP, but it obviously makes it easier to play. And once a few people start doing well with events, everyone says, well, there's no counter to this. You know, it's too good. Vet Cat is a good example. Alchemist with Vet Cat. Well, Vet Cat's really easy to tie down. Don't have a condition and just engage him like any other Furious character. And he doesn't actually do very much. And then you just, you know, he's got very low defensive stats for a reason. You can farm him for MP. You know, and I think start of season three, people were saying, well, Obelisk is now rubbish because he can't have as much influence and because his attack's been reduced. And the nature of Puppet Master changes. I think Obelisk is great. He's one of the best counters to Fish. You know, I played him at a 32-man event 4 weeks ago, having not played many games this year, especially with Masons or Morticians or anything really. And I managed to win the event, and I played two Fish lineups and an Alchemist lineup with it. Last year I played Morticians, but I played Scalpel just because everyone said that Scalpel was rubbish and Obelisk was where it was at. And I think you just need to understand what other teams actually do to how to beat them. Not if you stop Fish scoring, you'll win.
The obvious counter-argument here is, well, Steve, you're sitting at number three on the Black Orifice rankings, and maybe you have a deeper understanding of the game than the majority of people would. How is this not being warped by your ability rather than, you know, the raw power or otherwise of any given team or any given captain?
Well, because if it was just purely by my ability, then it means that if I play a team that's apparently OP, I'd win every game 12-0. I played Masons and I won every game apart from the final 12-4. Mm. And they're bottom tier. So, you know, if I was playing this OP team, then I would just, you know, I would just win everything. And it's not a case of that. I think it's difficult to balance teams across different skill levels. And I think some teams will always be easier into other matchups. That's the nature of the game. You know, it's not rock, paper, scissor, but, you know, you can have certainly more favorable and less favorable matchups depending on the team's play style. You're playing Fish into S. Brisket and you've both got a footballing team. Well, it's going to favor the Fish because ultimately you're a slightly better footballing team. The same as if you're playing at two fighty teams, you know, one's going to obviously be slightly better at fighting than the other one. And then it comes down to the actual players, the decisions they make. Mm. I mean, the problem with Black Orifice is it's really hard to quantify on there the results because although, you know, you've got this raw statistical data, it doesn't necessarily indicate how many of the same teams have played each other. It doesn't indicate in the quality of the field or, you know, how many of the field are representative of that team. So, you know, if you've got a field of eight players and six of them are playing Fish, well, of course Fish are going to finish in the top three, you know, or more than likely to.
That's reasonable. I think the flip side of this as well is that Season 3 has seen heavier focus on the scoring game, and I think people are still trying to work out how to play against these fast scoring sides that seem to rack up 8 points before you can do anything. I reckon some of the models that you see in those teams and those teams themselves, you know, being called OP on that basis rather than like people going, what is the counter? What is the counterplay amongst the teams that don't favour that fast scoring style? You know, it's about doing your homework ultimately and working out whether the prevailing opinion based on, you know, a number of prominent tournament results is actually the case. Because we had Perkins on the last cast and we had a talk about, you know, game design and balance of play styles. And, you know, he's the first to point out, and it's probably an obvious thing to say, but he's the first to point out the game has built into it inherent countermeasures to deal with each playstyle. You know, you don't see... I think people are probably coming around to this now, but like Snakeskin, for instance, one of the best ball holders in the game for any team that can take her, an obvious counterpoint. You know, I made the point last cast that you look at Rage, you look at Boar, both have access to concussion. You know, stripping influence is a great tool, you know, applied to a striker who probably wants, you know, at least two or three to be able to do the job that they need to do. And at the moment, like, all we really seem to be seeing, maybe not everywhere, but, like, there's this strong kind of argument that the sky is falling, these teams can't be countered, they're too dominant. Without any real empirical basis for it, you know, you gotta do the homework. You gotta get in there. You gotta play the games against these teams. You gotta work out the counter strategies. And, you know, we see a lot of Fish in our local meta. Basically, newer dudes who have picked up Shark and are getting pretty decent results. You know, they're scoring eight points a game. But what that has shown, like Campbell and I, and Campbell plays scoring teams as well, is that there are a range of counterplays to these teams. And it's up to you as a player to learn how to play against it.
I think that's the point. You know, I think people have different play styles with the same team. So I know that when I played Bryce at the Rusty Cup at the weekend, he scored three goals in every one of his games. But when I play Fish, I tend to quite often go for a 2-2 style, because I think that against a good player, reliably scoring that third goal is very difficult. And it's actually a lot easier to use your positional speed and other tools to kind of beat on a player and actually pull them out of position and obviously still hold the ball. So I think play style certainly is a degree in there. But you're absolutely right. I think you have to understand what your opponent's bringing and what you can do to counter that. You know, all of the teams have got tools to do it. There's engaging your own player so that the juice doesn't work, putting the ball on a player that can hold it well or has a low kick stat to make sure that, you know, your opponent has to come in. And ultimately, if you're playing against someone like Sharp, he's got to come in to get the ball. They can't do anything else. They can't kill your players reliably well. You know, not unless you kind of put someone squishy well out there. So they've got to come in. So you've got to just factor that into where you position the ball, where you position your players. And if they brought someone in, well, you get to kill them.
Yeah.
So, you know, and sometimes you might be like, well, they scored four. Okay, I've killed Sharks. So Sharks now not on the board. He can't come back till next turn. Can they get the ball back? No. Okay, do I need to count a score? Can I use it for positional to go first next turn to get that extra player and that six-point activation? You know, if they're going to then counter score, that's eight, right? Well, I've got the ball back now, though. I can win. You know, it's all about thinking ahead to that next turn, putting the ball on the player, or position it so they can't get it. Or there's an element of dead ball, but depending on how you play, you can minimise that. You know, you don't have to kick it to the flank where there isn't anybody. You can put the ball where it's positioned on one of your players. So when I was playing against Bryce, I put the ball on Marbles, engaged by Brick and Mallet, so that if he came in for the seduce, he had really weird angles for the counter charges. And at the end of the day, I was still a 1-4 kick. So, you know, ultimately, he would end up probably having to be engaged himself. So it'd be a one dice kick needing a five, really unreliable. You know, and at that point, Siren just dies.
Pretty complex kind of interaction going on. It's probably worth breaking down a bit. So parking the ball on a player with a shitty kick stat. So like 1-4, that's the monkey, wasn't it? Like 1-4.
Yeah, 1-4. So basically, when I won the role against Bryce, and I elected to kick because I didn't want to have Shark or Siren massively up the field at the start of the turn, because that would mean that I wouldn't be able to really set up positional play later on in the turn as easily. So I kicked with Mallet, and the reason I did that was because I wanted to position him further up because he's quite slow to give me options later on. And although the superior strategy on Mallet is kind of quite predictable, your opponent has to factor that in, so you don't have to do it, but ultimately you can factor it in. You know, he has to factor into his plans. And I positioned my team around an obstacle to kind of give them cover, allowing countercharge lanes between Brick and Marbles. And I still had kind of Flint in there just goaltending because, obviously, he couldn't score. I didn't want to give him any easy points. So he was sitting back, being an obstruction. And Bryce ended up with the ball on Sharp, which is kind of a fairly predictable kind of place in the turn one with a couple of momentum. And the only way to score at that point is Shark has to come in. And he has to come in, try and bounce off players, get a clear line and take a shot. He managed to do that, but in doing so, he kind of then had to dodge away or else he was going to be engaged by like four players, or vulnerable to like being grouped up on. So it meant that he only had a low momentum count at the start of the next turn. Yep. And what I did is I did actually superior strategy Mallet because it did allow me to kind of get that momentum going and get a few points. So it was actually plus one roll to me in the second turn, even though he scored. And when I kicked out, I actually put the ball onto players like Harmony and Marbles because of that linked activation and going first. I can use that to dodge into position, to get into Shark, to bring Marbles in to get the plus one damage. But if you've got someone like Marbles, poor kick stat, in cover, it's 4-1. You've got him engaged, it reduces his kick stat again if it was a slightly better kick. And you've positioned, so they've got to come in to get the ball again. You kill Sharp, you know, they can't reliably get the ball. Grayscales isn't great at tackling the ball when you've got a 4-1 in cover with the players around him. And he has to do a wedge to go to get in because you've got Britt, you know, and ultimately, even if he gets the ball, he's got a pretty low kick stat once he's had to where to go in. So it's really understanding how to position to minimise that. You know, you talked about Snakeskin. Snakeskin's a great ball holder against the Deuce. You know, and I think everyone plays Harry at the moment with Alchemist, which is, again, this group kind of thing. Whereas I personally think Snakeskin's a much better drop because it goes into your weaknesses much better. And I know Harry has fire, which is quite useful, obviously, with the conditions of Betcat, and he's got the goad. But two models with high defense and clone that are good with the ball, fantastic. Stops Obelus kind of taking it away easily. Stops Seduce. You know, has that dodge away from Shark if he positioned correctly. I think, you know, and I think it plays into their play style. So I'm surprised that people don't do that. For me, I think defense is the best stat in the game, and having the highest defense team with things like clone is just filth.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I was spewing when Midas lost Klein. That was just devastating for me.
Yeah, fucking crying. He's got some river.
I think Midas is actually a lot more fun and a lot better now. I think one of the it's the fact that you can support your team. I think a good captain needs to be able to either get a job done or provide support, which is why Honor Shark, Obelus, Midas, things like that, they're all very good at doing both.
Yeah, they have a good kind of utility and the ability to be able to change up the way they play, or, you know, drag a model back, bring them in, you know, if something doesn't quite go right. Now, it's interesting you were talking about the way people, the group think, and the way people kind of perceive certain models. Do you think we're actually still at a learning stage of the game? Like, I get this perception that we're still, you know, on a whole, the meta, the global meta, are still trying to learn these models or understand them and then come up with the counters, because people do have this tendency to drift towards set teams or set ideologies, and that, you know, they haven't thought out, okay, I could play a nine and have all the counters to other teams, but then they still just play the same six over and over again. What do you think, that's an issue that we haven't developed to that point yet?
Possibly. I think the difficulty is that obviously with the changes between seasons to a couple of players and to tapping, you know, that you have the kind of game itself has changed. It has gone from more of a takeout orientated game to, I think, for most teams, a 2-2, and people haven't adapted to that. They are, as you say, still playing their six. And I think it's understanding when you're picking your nine, why you're picking them. So I did pick in with Mason's Vet Harmony because, you know, I specifically for that smoke matchup, because, you know, I was worried about that condition heavy game. And ultimately, when I played Alchemists, they didn't drop smoke. They chose to stick with their six, which was their Midas, and then their Vet Cat and Harry, you know, the very predictable six. And I think, and I said to my opponent, you know, I think that's a mistake after the game. I said, ultimately, if you play the condition heavy game and sit back, he's receiving, you know, it's going to be a really tough game for me because I'm going to have been taking so much damage coming in, and I've got to come in at that point. It may not be the best kind of game play for me, you know, most enjoyable game. Ultimately, if you want to win, that's what he probably should have done. Yeah, and it ended I ended up going 8-0 up against him.
On the basis of takeouts, or was it like one goal, two takeouts?
Two goals. So at end of turn one, I scored with Flint, and then I'd won momentum, so he kicked the ball out, and I managed to position on a far enough up the pitch that I had a choice of either using four and Flint to try and get the ball, which was, he had to go a Vet Cat compound kind of near the goal, and then Midas between them. He had the ball on Midas. So you'd have thought a fairly safe place. So I could have maybe wandered round and then did a where'd you go, and then obviously try and tackle Midas. But I ended up using Honor, six on Honor, my legendary as well, just because I needed the extra influence. And I used her to run in to engage compound, so no counter charge. Did a 2-inch dodge into Midas to get around unpredictable. Tackled. He had to counter because he needed to get the ball back, so he tackled back. I tackled and then ended up having a shot on goal engaged by Midas, but it's a 3-die shot, 88% chance going in.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
And, you know, his first activation turn two with four still on Flint, going 8-0 up, really put him in a bind. And obviously then he had to think about his options. And he managed to kick the ball out, get it to Vitriol, and I've stopped him from scoring with a bonus time goad from Marbles, the worst mascot, clearly.
Yeah.
He's garbage. Absolutely garbage.
Man, it's why I was playing Tentacles in season 2 for the blind. Like, just little things like that. You look at these abilities, and they can be fucking, like, game-breaking if you play them at the right time.
Hypnosis, it's a thing.
Well, I agree with the blinding, absolutely. I think tentacles is fantastic choice, especially against some players. You know, reducing your kicks that just a distance is just, or even their attack to reliably get the ball. You know, some players have a tackle on two. Well, if you've got, if you're 4-1 and you're now down to tack four, you know, you need 3-4s. You're going to burn a couple of influence. It's much less likely to happen.
I feel like there should be a fundamental question that people ask themselves when they put a team on the table. You really should start from the point of, what am I trying to do here with the team that I have and my sideboard pieces? You know, I've got 9. It's obviously going to be a sideboard component. What am I trying to do with this? You know, and then it's a case of like working through what's on the card of each player and going, well, how can I apply this in different situations? You know, when is this going to be relevant? Where do the synergies pop up? Rather than just, you know, automatically accepting, okay, well, Shark's a strong captain, he can win games, you know, fucking YOLO, look at me score. The game has a lot of depth to it, and I think if you just accept what people are saying, you know, this is good, this is bad, doing yourself a disservice by not actually, I guess, analysing the possibilities, you know, by getting ahead of the meta in a way, purely on the basis of you know, research and application. At the moment, I'm playing a lot of Blackheart. I'm basically playing a lot of Blackheart because I feel like he's a really good counter to Shark. And I've had games where I've played against Shark. Blackheart has been legendary on and gotten strong. So 0-0 movement. And I've still managed to pull off, pardon me, 6-point activations with him. The guy's not meant to move anywhere, but you've got a captain that can basically counter that oppressive Shark turn 2 goal legendary and actually get back into the game, you know, to stop it from just being a whitewash. But if you listen to popular opinion, you know, Blackheart is a shit guy, he can't do that much.
Blackheart's really good, actually.
He's phenomenal. And importantly, he's got a 2-inch melee in a game that has changed at a meta level, like with the permanent home crowd. You know, what he basically does, and I played another game today where it's the last turn, Blackheart's one initiative, he's got the ball, he's got like a 1-inch melee target next to him that he needs to whack a bit to generate absolutely no reprisal. That is such a reliable tool, just purely by the fact that he's got 2-inch melee on his card. No other Union captain has that at this point, so I don't see why you would ever dismiss him out of hand. You know, the Shadow Like is great to get out of combat. Just another example, I guess, of, you know, new shit comes out, therefore the old shit gets discarded.
I mean, I think you're right. People obviously have, like, the new shinies, and I get that. You want to play with the new stuff to see what it's like and things like this. But I think the point you made there really was actually why are you picking your 9? And when you're picking your team, you know, don't just – it's counter picks. You know, they pick something, you pick something. It's there is a strategy to the way you pick your players, and to obviously make choosing whether to pick first or second as well is quite a big thing. You know, if you're playing against someone, choosing to actually kick the ball so you can see what their 6 is and saving that last pick can make that game for you, because you've managed to kind of pick something that they haven't got a counter to, or you've picked something that counters everything that they've got perfectly. And I think there's an element of that that people just automatically go, oh, I'll receive. Well, when I play Morticians, I want to kick as well. I want to get Obelisk up the field. I want to see what you've got. I want to be able to control that kind of that element of the game.
Mm. I want last activation.
I've come around to that first term kind of kicking just because of what it gives in terms of the tournament pick. Like, absolutely. I prefer to, as an alchemist, I prefer to be able to pick last because I can put people in the situation where they don't know if I'm taking Midas or Smoke. And, you know, it puts pressure on them. And I'm also putting board pressure on them by kicking to them with someone like Vitriol who can, you know, if they make a bad play or a bad pass, I can basically score, and I'm also getting ball position on them.
Yeah, I mean, Mason's a superior strategy when you're going last. Yeah, that's just 2 activations, you get to do whatever you want, and it 2 unanswered activations can come in quite a lot in a turn.
It's dirty, but hey, man, Mason's a shit, so...
yeah. They're definitely not shit. I think they are harder to use, but I actually really enjoy playing them. I think they're a bit more draining maybe than some teams, but they are very, very good.
Yeah, they are the only team with access to the extra activation, you know, like you just said. That alone is worth consideration, you know, and then you look at the massive amount of damage or points that you can whip out from a Harmony Honor linked activation. that's a fucking amazing tool if you have the lateral thinking ability to apply it.
I mean, one of the good things is because you've got that reposition on honor as well, you can ultimately dodge the monkey in. So they think they're 3 inches away, they're safe. You can dodge him in. Honor can go in and will, you know, reliably do a lot of damage. Attack 8, 3 damage on 2 hits. Momentous, she legendaries, that's 15 damage. That's a pillar player. And then you've still got the linked activation to score with Harmony, who's got a, what, 16-inch goal threat on 4 dice without anything else. You know, so that's a 6-point activation, effectively. They've got a, you know, or you've spent 2 activations to do it in one go, but it's, you're 6 points up. That's a game.
Yeah, but that's half the game. Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's an interesting point as well. I think the other thing that I have thought about, given the prevalence of the scoring game, is that teams like Shark can only score in 4-point increments, generally speaking. And I think that really, it lends itself to the counter strategy of, you know, scoring in 6-point activations in response. You've got any number of teams. Butcher's Fillet is a great example of this. Blackheart can do it. Rage can maybe do it. I think you can see it in Alchemist. You can see it in Masons. You can see it in any number of teams. But the basic principle is, you know, if they're scoring in 4-point increments and they have to do it 3 times, you want to score in 2 6-point increments, you know, and close the game out on your terms.
It's obviously not always easy to achieve, but yeah, I think that when you play against a scoring team, you've got to acknowledge the fact that they are going to score at some point. But when they do it, you want to make sure they've done it by overextending or by leaving themselves in a bad position so that you can then obviously counter and get 2 points off the player they've put forward probably. You've got the ball in a place where it's not easy for them to get it back, and then you then force them to come and play your game. And at that point, as soon as they start playing your game where, you know, they're not really doing much, they're just kind of whiffing around and you know, getting momentous dodges or whatever else, they're not actually achieving much and you're actually doing damage, you're actually, at that point, you're going to start winning. You know, I think I never go into, quite often I hear on podcasts where people say, oh, I've got a game plan and, you know, I've got a strategy. I never do that. I go into a game just kind of understand, obviously I want to get 12 points, but I never go, right, I'm going to score 3 goals or I'm going to do this. I reassess the game each time the board state changes. And I think that's what's really important, being able to go, well, this hasn't gone as planned. What do I need to do? How do I minimize the impact, or how do I maximize the impact from this? What do I actually want to do now? What am I going to do? You know, what am I going to set up for next turn? You know, and I think people don't think far enough ahead. You know, sometimes, so when I played against the Alchemist player, I let him score because although I could have probably stopped him, we spent so many resources doing it and I wouldn't really achieve much when it, you know, it was not guaranteed. But by letting him score, it actually allowed me to advance what I wanted to do, which was to position myself to kill 2 of his players next turn. And also, it meant he clocked out. That's one of the other things people don't really understand. They go, oh, the counter charges for Masons. It's really easy to move around and all this. It just eats your clock. You know, 3 of my games, my opponents clocked out, and the other one had 5 minutes left. He won every other game he played in under 20 minutes. You know, that's a massive pressure.
Yeah, and probably gives you this consecutive advantage over turns, not just in terms of clock time, but also, like, your opponent, like, becoming fatigued, decision fatigue. I think last time you and I played, we had a good chat afterwards. The idea that Masons are this counterpunch team, they seem to do it really effectively. Just set up, opponent comes in, and they're just, like, counterpunching the whole time. Like, they've got some, even Granite, actually. I didn't appreciate it until that game that we played.
Yeah, Momentous Knockdown, Gut and String, both really low results. Got a good reposition if you damage anybody. And I did take Granite in my 9, but I didn't play her because of the matchups, the way my opponents pick their players. So obviously I think into Fish, she's going to struggle a little bit because of that 1-inch melee and that speed. And I really wanted that reach from things like Mallet instead. But for me, I think she's quite good into maybe Fillet. Fillet wants to come in. 1-inch melee, and you've got a reliable, as you say, reliable counterattack, especially if you're bonus timing it. You know, getting that knockdown on Fillet, or even getting the Gut and String on her, meaning that other players can then kind of kill her easier next, the rest of that turn, and you're taking away that super solo then.
Yeah.
And also the rough ground, Fillet doesn't like it. You know, you're making her spend influence to come in then, so having to give herself +2 speed.
Or it's spending, you know, momentum to glide. Either way, you're draining resources, which is good.
Yeah. And then obviously, you know, you've got maybe, it depends on, if you've got her and, like, Brick and Marbles, you've got kind of this area of where, you know, where do you position? You've got 2 countercharge models and potentially rough ground. And then a good counter-attacking piece itself. That, as you say, each turn, that's having to kind of eat into your thinking, where you're going to go, what am I going to do? So, yeah, I think
I was surprised by, I guess, how nuanced the Masons got in Season 3. It's not until you see two overlapping kind of counter-charge auras that you start to appreciate that, actually, you've got to unpick this puzzle if you want to get anything done in a given turn. You know, you've got to solve the problem of counter charge before you can actually get to your own game.
And then do you want to end up engaged by marbles? Because that just turns Honor up to a massive amount of damage. You know, you're likely to lose that player, so where do you position to avoid that?
Yeah, I played one opponent today, actually, and he was playing Honor Masons. Just doing cheeky shit, like using acrobatics to, I think, dodge the monkey in. Is that right?
Quick time from Honor, that's right.
You know, just setting up these, like, these casual crowds, you know, and then she can pop Legendary to get the influence partially back. But, you know, just cheeky shit like that that your opponent doesn't necessarily think about ahead of time.
Yeah. But also, you got to think that works. You can use that to get around unpredictable movement. You can use acrobatic on Harmony to get around unpredictable movement, or they've dodged away. So When I played Bryce, the first turn, he had the ball on Shark, and I had the opportunity to actually score. I'd moved Harmony up and left three on her, and Bryce didn't see the superior strategy and Legendary from Honor to then do a link again. So I had five on Harmony, who charged Shark, and he elected to just counterattack rather than defensive stance. And I had enough range to tackle the ball, to acrobatic into range and shoot. Unfortunately, my dice failed me. I had 10 dice needing two fours to get a momentous tackle, and I rolled 1-4. So I was a little bit miffed at that. It was a game of crappy dice.
But you counted, roll better at that point.
he countered and obviously got the dodge away. But because I had acrobatics, it allowed me to get the ball back, to dodge back in, to tackle him. And then I actually damaged him and then did back to the shadows to then actually bring the ball back to my line. So it meant that Shark actually didn't have the ball turn one, even though I kicked to him, and he had to come into my lines to get it. You know, and I had the opportunity. I should have reliably gone up 4-0 there at that point, and he would have then counter-scored. So against the fish team, when you've kicked them and you've then actually scored first, that would have been a really big thing.
Absolutely. So you see the value in, you know, models that can have that extra dodge or that extra movement post charging or moving, and I find this with the new Midas, and this is one of the points that I really love about him, is that you can charge into someone, bounce off them if they elect to counter attack or a push dodge, you jump off them, do your heroic, jump back into them, and any model that can do that is just I find is so good in terms of messing with people's kind of tempo in the game. You know, Midas does it. I think Velocity is really good at it with her acrobatic. And any model that can do that is, really handy.
Yeah, like you were talking about Blackheart. I mean, Blackheart's another good example. He's got something very similar, you know, that double dodge really low down and 2-inch melee. So you can position to the extreme range of 2 inches. Do they spend momentum to counter? Because you can just dodge away and hit somebody else and dodge back in. You know, and you end up just, you know, as you say, draining those resources because you've got that reliable kind of movement in that activation.
Yeah, and the pocket threat of the Legendary if you want to use it to dodge back in at a critical time. Just a great toolbox. I think, you know, you look at...
He's shit, Dave. Like, that's shit.
Oh, he's a fucking shitlord. Like, he's totally dog shit. Why would you ever play him? I don't know. I've been playing him with a build that includes Rage, and I know that Rage is kind of out of favor, but
still awesome shit.
Fuck me, man. Blackheart, with access to Butchery and Tooled Up, he gets work done.
And not only that, Rage is a reliable machine to kind of generate momentum, you know, for one influence.
And to threat this 8-inch bubble on the board as well. Like, you use him as a area control tool, you know, just by having him there.
No. I actually played Union the other day against them, and it was quite against Blackheart. It was actually quite a tough matchup. You know, Blackheart can reliably ping-pong between players with the ball, and he's got a good goal threat, you know, and he can turn that damage in as well. It's being able to do both, I think, is what's important.
Yeah.
I think, you know, I think being able to know when to switch that gear is the challenge for the player. But I think having the availability is what makes a player or a team good.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And Dave and I have talked about this quite a bit where we both gravitate towards teams that will have that availability to be able to basically do the 2-2 game. But I think this is where, you know, Dave's basically proving that Blackheart can do both, where you don't want someone that only plays one game style, because, like you said earlier, Steve, that you want to be able to assess the game state and understand, okay, now I need to do this. Well, if you've only got, you know, a very football, you know, like a Shark football side, you can't actually shift your player to damage style. It just doesn't work. So, you know, players like Blackheart or, you know, captains that can shift between the two are the valuable ones for the players that understand how to basically shift their game between the two different play styles.
If you can shut down what that opponent does, so if you can shut down Sharks' scoring game, they can't do it. If you've got a team that can do both, you can still reliably score points. And that's where that strength comes in. You know, so I think that's why, for me personally, I always want a team that's got options and answers and isn't defined into one thing. The more options I've got, the more control and the more it comes down to my decision-making ability and where I can put my opponent into bad positions, bad decisions they've got to make.
Something Deno has said on multiple occasions as well, part of the fundamental skill of Gilball is giving your opponent no good options. You know, only bad options, where if they choose one thing, you basically get to do the other thing that you want to do.
You know, absolutely.
Forking plays, I think, is how he described it.
Forking. Yeah.
I think that's right. And I think it's also important to know when to give up stuff on the board state, when to let your opponents score or let them get points, because where that's going to put you afterwards. So although that sounds really weird, you know, obviously everyone wants to win 12-0. I think it doesn't matter how much you win by, as long as you win. So does your opponent, so a good example would be Vet Cat. So if your opponent's behind and he does Vet Cat Witness Me and he gives you two more points, most people automatically just do that now. They're just like, you know, into this group think of, oh, Vet Cat's OP, let's just do this. But that's then advanced your position in the overall game actually 2 points closer. Does that allow you to then actually take someone out? So, you know, do you allow that to happen? Do you think, well, actually, look, he's probably going to do this. And even if he doesn't, I'm still going to be like, so let's just say for argument's sake, it was 6-8 and, you know, he does this, it goes to 10-10 and it allows you to win. Well, if he doesn't do that, it's still 8-8 and you still get to take the player out you were going to plan to take out anyway. So you still go to, you know, 10-8, so you'd still be ahead. I think it's sometimes actually allowing that rather than spending the resources you have to just stop that.
Yeah, no, there's absolutely an art to the Vet Cat Witness Me. I think too many people want to, like, lay it down too early, and especially if it puts your opponent at 8 points, it's often a bad decision. I think, you know, it's a closing piece, or early on if you've kind of got that, you know, VP advantage, then you can do it then. But yeah, absolutely, you've got to understand that it's going to give them 2 points. So whilst it advances your game, it pushes everyone closer to the finish line.
Exactly that, yeah. I mean, ultimately, if they've got the ball, you don't want them to be at 8 points.
No, absolutely. I actually had this at CanCon. I had that exact scenario where I was looking at it. I had an opportunity to score. I had Vet Cat. I took the opportunity to score. There were a few kind of roles I had to nail, got them, scored the goal, put me on 8, and then put him in a situation where I had Midas in the middle, I had Vet Cat standing over someone he could witness me, and he had no good decisions. And so
I
had to take one of the two, yeah. But if I witness me first and I don't strip him of the ball, then he's on 8, he can score and game's over. It's a very different scenario.
And that's thinking ahead to the next turn, understanding what position you're going to put your opponent in, which I think is where people tend to fall down. You know, and that's where the kind of point and click teams kind of compensate for that a little bit, you know, because you can reliably 6 on Shark, you can get something done. You know, and I think we're back to that, why people kind of gravitate towards that naturally. And you'll find that players like Tobias is a good example. Tobias has been playing engineers for a long time, you know, and even when they were deemed rubbish, and he's done really well with them because he understands what other players do and how other teams work, and he's worked out how to counter that.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's kind of done his own thing just to kind of work out, well, what works for me.
Yeah, I watched him play a game last night with Pinvice. Like, he's picked her up for the first time in season 3, and man, I could almost hear his erection through the internet. I think he's going to have a lot of fun with her.
Yeah, I had a chat. He referred to the Penvice deletion overclocked tooled up as the unholy trinity. She can dish out a fucking shit ton of damage.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, plus two damage with a free charge and five influence left. Yes, please.
Yeah.
I think we were talking about it. I didn't see the game, but he said, 18 damage against a tough hide kind of model. It's okay.
Yes. Well, you and Tobias played in the finals of that LCQ, didn't you?
We did. Yeah, it was a very tough game. Very tough game. He played Ballista. There, lots of blasted earths. And knockdowns, second winding himself back out of range, and literally was just doing range damage, just weakening all my players. Mm. It was quite a tricky game, actually.
He's pretty iconoclastic. Like he plays his own style of Guildborn. I do like that about him. Yeah,
he's a very good player, and I think he made a mistake near the end of the game. It was a long day. It was a really tough field as well, and he made a small mistake by kind of coming in to kind of fight me at one point. It allowed me to kind of get back in the game with Scalpel and do some damage and actually kind of close the game out. And if he had just stayed back a little bit, like maybe a turn more, it would have probably gone his way.
Mm. Well, how's your form, you mad dog? Fucking taking smoke to the, to the World Championships very much against popular opinion.
I think I did that because I think Smoke was a really good counter to Obelus. Obelus hasn't got any good condition removal. He has to spend resources to do it. Can score, can do quite a lot of things. So that's why I did it. I was like, well, I'm fairly certain three of the top eight are going to be Obelus. Hmm. Plays well into everything else. I know how to play it. Let's just do that. Yeah.
Hmm. And Tim Wisniewski, he went full YOLO on you with some fucking amazing
ridiculous dice.
I think I actually had Tim beat. He played really well, and I had the ball on. I missed a three dice fire blast to kill Obelus. Ugh. Which was a bit, I was like, right, okay. So it meant I had to reevaluate and go in and use smoke to kill him. But I got the ball and I went to do a one touch football with smoke to pass the decimate to then pass back and then kick the ball off to the right flank. So he literally couldn't do anything because he had missed and rage engaged. And I missed the four dice pass from smoke and it scattered all the board right in front of his men. And I was just like,
I remember watching that. Yeah.
But Tim, I think Tim has a very different style to me. And it was really interesting to watch him play against Jordan. And obviously the game he played against me is quite, balls to the wall, just go in and take some crazy odds, and he was having a bit of a charmed run, and it worked out for him. It was really good.
Yeah, he's another guy who, like, if we're talking about working against groupthink, I mean, even the way he played his Obelus match into Jordan's Obelus, not conventional. Like you say, fucking low odds, but very high rewards when it did pay off. As opposed to, I guess, like Knack, who has this kind of Moneyball style, always play the odds, always take the high percentage. Basically systematically grind your opponent down more often than not win. Not really anticipating somebody who didn't think that way.
Yeah, and I think, the two styles kind of are the counter to each other depending on how the dice go. Having that lower chance of success, but obviously putting you 8 points up massively changes the game. So, yeah, is it worth taking a 30% chance to score at that point? Over holding the ball and waiting until a better chance when you might not get it? 30%. Well, to go 8-0 up, I'd take a 30% chance.
Particularly if it puts the ball in a spot where they can't score immediately afterwards, should you miss.
Yeah. Yeah. Or they have the ball, but you've not lost a player, and they've got to then work, as you say, to kind of bring it up the field again. Yeah. Tim's quite an interesting player, and I think he was so hungover, he was just like, I want to get this over as quick as possible.
I think he was still drunk. I don't believe he was still hungover. By all accounts, he was. Yeah.
Are you saying game, we're like over intellectualizing this?
Possibly. Yeah. I think the final. Sober then.
Yeah. I think there was a point at which his body, the muscle memory, took over, and it just remembered the hundreds of games he's played, and he just it just happened. He just played the way he was. He taught himself to play. I don't think his brain had anything to do with it.
It'd be interesting to see him at Worlds as well this year if he can make it. It'll be, I'd like to see what he's playing now. And you know, I think there's going to be some good teams and some good players there. So
well, I did see a very very attractive engineers team that he has been painting.
Yeah.
I think Worlds is going to be quite an interesting format, you know, because as you say, Jordan obviously plays the money ball kind of style, and that works for him. And over the course of X amount of games, you know, it's going to obviously potentially put him out ahead. But in a team format, it's a much tougher challenge, you know, because you can't, it's not one player. You've got to win at least two games. You can't, you know, you can't rely on just that one player, because are you going to get fed someone that's the weaker of the three? And then you get your other two stronger players playing your two weaker players, etc. And that kind of, there's quite a lot of things like that going on.
And it's an interesting pick style too, isn't it? Like you, you both nominate one player to be on a table, and then you can, you pick their matchup against them and then the other player. It's something like that, isn't it?
That's right, yeah. So both captains pick a player for table one, and the other captain picks a player for table three. And then they get to pick their opponent.
Yeah.
And then the two remaining players play on the middle table. So it's, do you put your best player down and then obviously pick his matchup to guarantee a win? Or do you put your weakest player down to pick his matchup? But then if they put their strongest player down, you know, so there is a bit of gamesmanship in there and a bit of thought.
Yeah, no, I liked it when I read through the format and how they did it. I thought it was better than what we've seen of like the War Machine and Hordes and the way they've kind of done their matchups of, you know, table picks and that kind of thing. I thought as far as a bit of gamesmanship in there, and yeah, like you said, like, you know, you can't just rely on one decent player or one decent player to kind of show the others the way. So
if they don't call their team the Borg, then I'm going to be disappointed.
I like the self-nominating of the committee, the WTC USA committee.
First rule of politics, guarantee the vote.
Yeah. I love it. So, Steve, have you sorted out a team? You're on a specific team. Do you know your teammates for the WTC?
So I'm the captain for the England team, or one of the captains for the England team, and the applications close actually today for the team. So we'll be going through them to kind of, you know, work all that out shortly. There's two captains and a couple of committee members, and obviously then it's been open to applications. I think it's going to be interesting, we're talking about this groupthink, to see what teams are actually represented at Worlds, you know, because some teams are really good, but they have some really strong counters. So Obelus is quite a strong counter to Fish in general. You know, you've got Seduce from Siren, Beautiful from Siren, which gets around Puppet Master, but bullying anyone else and he can reliably get it, you know. And if they play Corsair, Cosset, it's very underrated. Cosset will pretty much one round Corsair with Tooled Up and Dirge. Just wreck him.
If you were going to pick three teams to take, you know, that you think would be able to counter and then be strong teams, what would be the three different guilds?
That's a tricky one, because it depends what players can actually play well with. But I think Morticians,
assuming that everyone can play any guild well, yeah, what would be the three strongest?
For me, I think Morticians are definitely in there. They've got a lot of counters and they've got a strong game, either goal or takeouts, and they can play into everything. I think you then got a choice between Alchemists, Union, Fish. To be honest, any of the teams really. I mean, I know some of the new releases, stuff that are coming out. I know Hunters are going to be looking very interesting. They've got some new cool stuff. Obviously, the Farmers should be out then as well. And I know what they do. So I think it's not a case of, you know, what the current matter. I think you're just going to have to pick teams that you think can play into everything, or that have the least bad matchups and what you're most comfortable with. I think that's the way to play it.
All right. No, that's a fair call. Because I guess part of my question was alluding to whether, you go full, you know, full football with three sides, or whether you, you know, try to chop and change. I definitely think Morticians are a great one because they've got so many good matchups. But whether, like, Fish push out Alchemists or vice versa, whether that kind of situation occurs.
The thing is that you've all seen S. Brisket now, so she's a good goal threat. She's got a great goal scoring team. And I know what obviously some of the new stuff that will be out will do, and how that will kind of affect her.
Yeah.
So Fish is still the best scoring team, but then do Union become the second best scoring team? So if you're taking Alchemists, but you're then facing a Union matcher that can score better than you, well, then you're going to lose out. I think it's going to come back to this versatility of being able to switch gears and have answers to the most stuff, because you're going to have these people that just take oddball stuff. You know, you're talking about Tim playing engineers. They're not deemed on the group think as one of the top teams. But, you know, I'm sure in his hands they're going to be a tough matchup. So, you know, you can't – I don't think you want to take something to counter a specific team. You want to take something that you can counter most teams with and you're good with.
Yeah. Do you think engineers sit in that kind of category? I mean, I've been playing them on and off. I'm playing we're playing a bit of a small league at the moment, and they seem to have a whole bunch of the tools to counter, you know, killing the ball or, you know, different plays that can be out there. I think they're almost of like a higher kind of skill cap team that have all the tools, and it's almost like you need to understand every single matchup. Then you know which six to put on the table to then counter that. Do you agree with that? Yeah.
I think the engineers is they are more reliant on the team you pick. So if you make a bad picking choice, it has a bigger impact than some of the other teams. So, you know, it's knowing when to play certain players and what you're going to try and achieve with them. So I know some people don't get on with Ratchet, and some people obviously want it for the tooled up, or then they're thinking, do I want to do deletion and double blasted earth? 4 damage going out twice a turn is quite a lot. Hoist and mother, but then, you know, mainspring's really good. Which captain do you pick? There's a lot of choices in there, you know, and I think like Locust is a really interesting model, but I think he's really difficult to use well. You have to have a specific circumstance you want him to play well in. And I think the changes to velocity as well have made... I think every team now, you need to take at least one good goal-scoring threat to have that option on the board, that pressure.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, I agree with you with engineers that you need to, evaluate what they're taking and then, counter that, because there's some obvious counters that they have. But there's also, you make one bad pick and...
And I think the problem with engineers as well is the influence spread. You've got a lot of players that can do a lot of stuff, but you need more influence than you have for the team. So when I played a few games with them, you know, it was trying to work out who was the player to put the influence on that turn, because you could have put it on everybody. You needed like an extra 3 influence to kind of get what you wanted done. And they haven't really got that kind of efficiency that some other teams have, like that furious kind of stuff in there, or that battery model, really. I mean, and one of the other choices is, we've talked about it so much, but in the current meta, everyone thinking that, you know, it's all about football teams. You've got players like Compound and Tenderizer, who I think are, you know, legitimate issues that the people have to play around. And having the ball on Compound is just amazing. You know, Gluttonous Mass with 2-inch melee is if you want to play...
He's a fantastic counter to, Shark, absolutely.
Mm. You know, so I think, you know, there's people say, well, counter charge is really easy to get around. Well, it's not. You've got to have players that can dodge in or bounce off. You've got to spend time positioning. You've got to make sure they haven't got the resources. You know, dodging in to hit Compound, you know, if you've got MP, you know, he can knock you back, knock you out of position. It takes time. And I think that is underestimated when people have this group think. They think, oh, it's just easy to do this.
So it took some vet velocity into some fish just to fuck with them and see, like, how it kind of rolled out. And even just simple, you know, it's hard to not take normal velocity, but vet velocity's ability to, you know, just increase the target number just fucked with Fish's dice enough that it gave me enough opportunities to, win the game.
I mean, what about imagine playing, I know you probably wouldn't, but imagine playing Compound and vet velocity.
Yeah, and then you put Colossus and you just cover the goal and then they need a target number 6 to actually score. I know that's just ridiculous.
And you wouldn't 2 dice, but... yeah. Yeah. 2 dice to shoot and a counter charge. You're like, go and score now.
Yeah, exactly. And, the options are there. Maybe you're not going to skew it to that kind of level, but, the options are there to really mess with people's gameplay. And that's – I don't know if engineers are just that kind of puzzle that people want to solve, but I think that's what appeals to me definitely, is that they have the tools and just your ability to apply them is based on your own skill level.
So that's an interesting point, though. You know, you talk about players like Vet Velocity and Compound. I mean, what they essentially do is force your opponent into suboptimal plays. They're taking higher risk plays than they probably would want to in any other circumstance, but they're forced down that path because of the, you know, the static abilities of your models. That in itself is a value. You know, to...
Yeah.
And obviously one of those situations where Steamforged has gone, all right, we've built the tool, it's up to you how to apply it. You know, if you're discarding that velocity on the basis of, oh, well, people say she's shit, you've not thought hard enough about the type of matchup she's valuable in. And the type of matchup she's valuable in is exactly the one that people seem to be complaining about. The difference between target number 5 and target number 4 is significant. That for Fish has probably got them trying to expend resources, you know, a greater amount of resources than they actually want to expend to hit a goal. You know, maybe they have to move to a better spot. Maybe they have to somehow, you know, deal with velocity being where she is. Maybe they have to somehow work their way around compound, whatever. I think this goes back to Steve's point and countercharge. You're forcing your opponent down a certain decision-making path. You know, by taking somebody like that velocity, you're doing the same thing. It's about, I guess, putting the brakes on these fast-scoring teams through proper application of the tools that are available to you.
100%. You know, I think engineers are a really good counter, actually, to Fish. You've got, what, smash ins in there. You've got low knockdowns. You've got reach. You've got locus who can drag players in. You've got target number. You know, you've got a lot of anti-footballing tech, and at the same time, reliable passes yourself. You've got rough ground for range damage that doesn't target anybody. You know, and only Shark really has light fluid that matters, I think. You've got other players. You know, a lot of players have taken Hag for that extra movement speed. Well, she's pretty squishy.
Yeah, you know? And with some ranged attacks, she goes down with, you know, tooled up. She goes down pretty easily. So I think the big one there is the smash shins. Like, after listening to, what was it, the Singled Out podcast where they were chatting about some engineers tech. And
the one with,
yeah,
with
some of the
Pash.
With Pash, Pash.
That was a good episode,
talking about,
man.
Balls, as always. No, it was really good. And it got me thinking about the engineers, you know, given that I'm playing them a bit at the moment. And how the toolbox that Colossus actually brings. Like, smash-ins is massive. Like, I've seen plays where, you know, obviously Shark comes in, scores a goal, sits in a position for a snapshot or whatever, and then Siren threats the ability to then snapshot straight off Shark, that kind of thing. You smash his shins, he's fucked at that point. Like, you're just taking that off the table. So, yeah, it's looking for those counters that are really good into, yeah, your Fish or whatever is strong in the meta. And I mean, yeah, Colossus is one. I mean, he struggles into the beta kind of teams because they can use him as a bit of a momentum battery. But into the scoring teams where they're not actually attacking him, yeah, okay, they'll get the momentum off him just punching him. But he's also got the inherent kind of counters to what they want to do.
That's it. I mean, Mallet as well is a good example. He's, you know, fallen out of favour, as it were. But I took him in every Fish matchup I played because I wanted that 3-inch reach. I wanted that singled out and that smash ins, those low momentous results. And as you say, you know, if your opponent positions for that, they've probably set their turn up for that, you know, counter ball. And if you do that, what are they going to do? Well, Shark can't do it now. What do I do with the ball? Where do I go? Well, you know, it gives you the rest of the turn then to just do what you want, and they can't actually make that work.
Mm. Absolutely. He's got smash ins on one too, doesn't he? It's something ridiculous like that.
Momentous as well.
Fuck. Actually, I think.
Smash ins.
Yeah, that's brutal. I don't actually, from memory, I don't think Colossus still has smash ins. I think it's Vet Velocity now has it. Or has it? I think Colossus lost it when he got Unexpected Arrival, season 2 to season 3. But either way, yeah, it's having those tools to basically shut it down. I think the other thing with them is. Engineers have this one model that can basically, you know, mimic other models, and it's how you apply that onto, you know, your game plan. He's like sturdy, tough hide, can bounce around, but he can steal all those abilities. So it then becomes a situation of, okay, well, what inhibits the other team, and how can he actually make that even worse for them? So, you know, he can take the singled out, he can take the smash shins, you know, Hoist can basically do whatever he needs to do, and, you know, becomes more that gameplay ability of how you can apply, you know, your knowledge of your team based on the current kind of table stone.
I mean, obviously, you've got that mother interaction, which is just a lot of fun as well.
Oh, that's fantastic.
It's a massive dodge, and, you know, you can, by thinking ahead and by positioning things like Mother's Nest, you can kind of really threaten weird areas and kind of get crowding outs and do different things. So, yeah, Hoist is such a versatile player.
Yeah, I love that on the burrow you still get the attack too. So you burrow,
yeah,
and the influence isn't burnt. You get the attack, and then Hoist's got like a push dodge on, like a momentous one on the two. So then you push whatever off, and then you can do something else. Like, yeah, it's so good.
And he's such a tough player to try and kill. I mean, you have to spend so many resources to try and take him down. It's, often is it worth it?
Rarely.
Man, I've played Tobias enough to just go, yeah, fuck you, Hoist. You are a fucker.
But he's so good as a goal threat as well. Like, yeah, he's got a, momentous tackle on the one. So, like, yeah, I played in a game the other night where he just used the burrow, jumped over, tackle, goal, thank you very much. And it doesn't matter if he's shooting over a player or he's engaged. Like, I'll go down to three dice and then I'll go back up to four with a bonus time. It's not so bad.
Yeah, and I'll give you the mechanical, fuck you, mechanical little fingers in the air just at everybody. Yeah. Yeah, he's pretty good. Velocity's the same, just in the sense that def 5, just sitting there in front of goal, like screaming goal threat, turn 1.
Mm.
And then you basically have to pitch a fit to try and get her off the table. Like, just super resilient. And
doesn't she get a def 6 for nimble as well?
Def 6, yeah, I was going to say. Yeah. You throw up the nimble if you've got the... It's just like the opposite at that point.
So many mechanical middle fingers. Just so many.
But I think you're right though. They've got a much higher entry level for kind of getting good play, so that's why people struggle with them. Same for maybe hunters.
Yeah.
They've got tools, but it's just not easy to kind of step into.
There's a lot of complex interactions that you have to understand before you can really play them optimally. A lot of synergies and whatnot. As with hunters.
One of the things I find that people often do is if you position stuff out of their reach, they'll still just walk that player forward up the field, and they've got no real aim with doing it, and ultimately they end up putting them in a bad position. They're not thinking the turn ahead where, well, is what's this? You were talking about Rage earlier on as that 8-inch bubble. They're not thinking, where am I going to position that? If I put Rage there, Rage is very easy to kind of do damage off of and to farm momentum off of. What am I leaving him open to? And I think it's kind of understanding that. When you kind of get that positional play as well as understanding, knowing what your opponent's stuff does, that's when you kind of start forcing them into those bad decisions.
Yes, well, I've been forced into enough of mine to appreciate the value of it.
Are you talking Gilball there? Or
no.
General life decisions.
I'm lucky to be here. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, I remember that night. It was a good night.
It was the greatest and worst night ever. In the interests of bringing this to a conclusion, do you have any sort of closing thoughts that you want to make?
All I'd say is just people should play more with the stuff they want to play with and make it work. There's a lot of tools out there. Just understand what those tools are for and how to apply them. And don't get stuck into the mind think of, oh, it's just fish and I have to play this lineup, because that doesn't work. Find what fits your play style as well. I mean, I play most teams, but I get more enjoyment playing certain teams like the Masons. Kind of fit my play style, and I really get enjoyment out of using them and having to think. So find out what works for you, but give things a try.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep. You are the human personification of a mechanical middle finger.
I'll take that. That's quite a compliment.
You're the one they're calling Steve Beeston, mate. I'm just some chump that makes a podcast.
Well, one of the questions I want to ask you guys is, do you think you're going to make it to the WTC?
I'm not going to make it, no. Not short of some kind of angel investor. Somebody dropping a shit ton of cash on me.
I'm trying to convince the family it's a good idea to get over there. I'm not sure how well that's going. Our good mate Jared, though, keeps trying to convince me to get over there and then do some kind of merc scenario where we can induct one player of a certain nationality into other nationalities to make up a three-player team.
It would be good to see you guys there if you can make it, obviously, and I think it's going to be a really good experience. I'm really looking forward to it.
I was actually super annoyed when it came out. Like, I was like, I so want to be at that.
I think it's going to be interesting to see the different metas collide, because there certainly feels a different meta in America to over here. There's all the events over there have like Alchemists and Fish, and the events here are very evenly spread. We had like 5 Butchers players in the top 10 of the event the other day. That was a 64-man event. So I think there's a lot of different kind of teams being played here, and it'll be interesting to see how that all kind of works out.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Yeah.
Look, I think the proposition for us is, you know, if we're going to fly that far, are we going to do STEMICON or are we going to do WTC? And for me, you know, STEMICON wins out on that.
For me, it's kind of like, if I'm going to fly that far, how long am I going to spend in Europe? Because that's a fucking long way to go for, you know, one weekend. You'd want to make a few weeks.
And how much are you going to smoke in Amsterdam, I think?
So much. all of the things. Nah, I don't know, man. Like, it'd be tempting to go crazy in that situation, but yeah, experience has told me it's probably not the best thing to do.
Yeah, and it's whether your life insurance policy covers it as well at that point.
Get high, fall into a canal. How does that story go down at your funeral? Probably the same way you did. Blub, blub, blub. That's probably a good point to call. Steve, thanks. That was a good chat. I enjoyed that a lot. It's good to have you on.
All right, guys. Well, look, have a great day, and thanks very much.
No worries, mate.
Cheers, Beeston.
Beeston. Hello, Campbell.
How you going, Dave?
Good, mate. Good.
I'm fired up tonight. I'm looking forward to a few games. Yeah.
Very good. Yeah, me too.
Bit of cowball action.
Yes, I'm trying to work out a way to harvest salt from the forums.
Oh my god!
I've got a whole bunch of meat I want to cure.
Yeah, I did see the explosion, or was pointed out the explosion by our good mate Hayden, and I couldn't even look. I wanted to get the popcorn, I couldn't even look.
Yeah, seriously. It's hard, man. It's hard.
So what was the general gist of the forum angst today?
I don't know, man, because when you gaze into the abyss, I think the abyss gazes into you also, doesn't it?
It does, and you lose part of yourself.
I'm dark enough, man.
Yeah.
But you know, I think the chat with Steve Easton should stir the hornet's nest a bit.
Absolutely, and that was a really good chat. Like, Steve's an absolute, sorry, Beeston is an absolute
beast
dude. I think what I found interesting about that, I don't think it made it onto the chat, was that his pupils are ridiculously dilated, and he tried to allude to the fact that it wasn't due to drug consumption.
Well, he's a boxer, isn't he? So maybe it's due to concussion.
Okay, yeah.
That's topical.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, it is. Brilliant.
Yeah, so you're fired up. What do you got tonight?
I've got a couple of league games for this little mini league. It's a bit of a tester for our meta. There's only five of us, but I've got a makeup game with Terry, and then I've got to play Ellie first. So I've got the energies, and it's what I like is it follows on for the conversation we were talking about with Steve that. It's about having the tools and the tools to fit a certain situation, and we did talk about how NGs actually have that. So I'm playing into Ellie will definitely bring shark fish. Well, he's fish anyway.
That's all he plays, right?
Yeah, so he'll play that. So I'm going to take the whole toolbox of goal defense and see how I can kind of pick that apart and show how that actually works.
You wouldn't be bringing Vet Velocity, would you?
I might be.
Campbell, people have views on that.
Trash. She's trash. She is trash until you come up against a team that hates plus one target number on their shots at goal.
Yeah.
And it's garbage. I'm not going to go the full, like, right down the rabbit hole and do, like, compound. And I think you could actually do Colossus and completely cover the goal. It just seems a bit ridiculous and situational because he can total surge or use Jack to push him off, that kind of thing. But I will probably take Vet Velocity. Just to kind of mess with that. I found last time it almost takes the snapshot off the table.
Yep.
Because, you know, two successes on fives is pretty hard, you know, if you're basically having to bonus time to get to four dice. So.
Yes. Yeah. That's like YOLO territory.
It is. And, look, don't get me wrong, Ellie will probably go for that. He did last time we played it. I think he nailed one, missed one. But that's fine. The miss is what basically, you know,
keeps you in the game against
Shark. Was the deciding factor. Yeah, absolutely. So probably play a bit of Pin Vice action. I love Pin Vice. She's just the murder bot, and really work on that. The 6-point kind of turnaround turns, you know, activations where I look to make a kill and a goal, to kind of, you know, roll over Shark and make sure he doesn't get the four with me only getting two. Sorry, 4-4-4, so three goals with me only getting two goals.
Yeah, yeah. Man, 2 6-point activations or 1 6-point activation, kill the ball, kill some more players, let the ball go.
Yeah, and I mean, they've got, this is a few other toolboxy things, is they've got, so I'll be taking Hoist and I'll take Ratchet. And I'll do a bit of the tooled up deletion double blast earth action. Beauty of that is it gets around Siren. So Siren's minus 5 to range. You're not targeting her, chuck an AoE on her. I reckon I can take her out pretty quick.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll have a couple of models with close control. So as soon as she's off the table, close control becomes a lot more relevant.
Mm-hmm.
And it becomes a bit of a soak for influence, really. You know, they've got to just make two tackles instead of one.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
So, yeah, that is painful.
So it'll be interesting to see how that kind of plays out when you know what your matchup is. You're going to skew heavily towards that and play all, you know, the entire toolbox that plays into it.
I got to say, the prevalence of Shark in the local meta, I find enormously reassuring, because I'm just not that worried about Shark anymore.
No.
You know how his game plan goes after a while, and you know the key pieces that you need to take out.
Yeah, absolutely. I like that.
Control the speed of the game.
And something that we always talked about early on, like back in Season 2 with Obulus, and how I actually enjoyed playing into Obulus, you know, win, lose, or draw. It just, you get your reps up against that, then you know how to beat it. And if there's no surprises, then good gameplay, you know, if you've got the tools there, good gameplay should be able to beat them. So, there's always a little bit of luck. You know, that's just a dice game. But
don't fear the monster. Don't fear the altered beaston.
Altered beaston. Oh, he's a champ.
So I got my seasoned brisket.
Oh, you seasoned the brisket up?
I have. I've stuck it together. She's like bare metal, but she's fully assembled.
Nice.
She's good to go. I actually got a practice game in with her on Vassal.
Oh, nice. How'd that roll out?
It was good. I played a guy who goes by the handle Teabag Nation. He's in Canada. He's a nice dude, actually. And he plays Masons. He plays Honor Masons. Big double bubble counter charge.
Oh.
Man, that's so... It's so annoying.
It's so annoying.
Fucking annoying to play around. But yeah, it was good. I don't know that based on one game I like her as much as I like Blackheart. That might just be personal preference.
Yep.
But yeah, she's got some fucking movement on her. And her ability to retrieve a dead ball off one of her players, like I can't remember the name of the character play, but that ability to pass from a model who's already holding the ball is amazing. It is just straight up amazing.
So the difference between that and Blackheart's one is he can trigger it off his playbook. Is that the
And she can trigger it off her as a character play.
Okay, so hers, she just has to spend. Okay.
Yeah. So yeah.
Sounds pretty interesting.
And you get the pass as well, you get the dodge off it, you get threat out of your wazoo.
You've generally got a Harry somewhere near there, so it's free.
I think TAC 5 is a little underwhelming. She's got Mom 2 on 3, which is okay. So she can put out the damage in the right circumstance, but really what she's wanting to do is, you know, ping around, score
get
goals.
It's interesting, it's the first time we've seen a model that gets, other than tap-in, gets a buff shooting for goal. And I wonder if that's something that'll happen more and more, because there's obviously a few models that reduce the, target number. Mm. Increase, and she reduces it. It'll be interesting to see if they do that more and more to just keep going towards this football angle.
Yeah, well, maybe it's a hint from Steamforge saying, you know, expect to see more goalkeepers.
Yeah.
They expect to see more models that actually affect the football game.
Yeah, absolutely.
And maybe, just brings it back to parity.
And maybe they're bringing out more goalkeepers as well. You know, maybe it's an indication of that. I mean, this is where Vet Velocity, the tough decision for her isn't so much, like, I think she's a great model. It's the losing Velocity in your 6, but it's also trying to fit her in the 9 as well. But I've kind of come to the decision that I actually don't mind Pin Vice, like having a single captain 9.
Yep.
And actually freeing up the space to have the entire toolbox. So Pin Vice Mother, and then you have the other 7 are your entire toolbox to then pick apart aside.
Wow.
So you're projecting to them what you're going to, you know, which captain you're taking, okay, but then you're counter-picking against them every time.
Yep.
Yeah. So
picking the right machine for the job.
Yeah, indeed.
I'd say.
Indeed.
I mean, you are preaching heresy, right?
I am. Yeah, because, you know, overclocking, tooled up, and as our good mate Tobias said, the unholy trinity, if you can get overclock, deletion, and tooled up on Pinvice, it does a little bit of work.
Fucking effective eight influence.
Eight influence. I think he did 18 damage, and he was saying to like a tough-eyed model or something. It was insane. Like, he'd obviously knocked him down or done something.
Yep.
But, yeah, when your average health is 14... I think, you know, yep. 14, 15 kind of mark.
Yep.
And even less on some models. You know, Pinvice, that's just like, yeah, see you later. No worries, you're gone. Move on to the next one. So.
And decent dodges as well.
Yeah, she's pretty handy like that, and pretty hard to, like a filler, it's pretty hard to stay out of the threat range because she can spend in one influence to basically just extend her threat range. Yeah. So, yeah.
Def 5. I don't know why we don't see more of it. Like,
yeah, well, I'm going to play more of it for a bit.
I feel that there's a certain irony in her name, given that you fucking need one to get her arm on.
I had to put it back on. I snapped it off again.
Oh, it's a little twig.
Yeah,
it's a little twig.
Oh, man, I had to do the same with Susan Brisker. I pinned her.
Yeah.
Her little arm, that was tiny. Oh.
I just tacked hers on with a bit of putty, but that's not going to last.
I don't mind a bit of the modelling.
Yeah, well,
you know,
look at you, man. You're a renaissance man. You're an all-rounder.
Love it.
Shit, you're going to be duelling dudes in the street at some point. Instead of just punching people in the forums.
I didn't bring my rapier this evening.
Didn't you?
No.
Campbell.
No,
you brought your fedora, you forgot your rapier.
So unlikely.
I'm a little disappointed.
So, yeah, there'll be a few games going on up at the old HH this evening. We've actually got a tournament coming up that I'm rocking out, but basically it's I'll play in it as well. 29th, it's Tabletop Gaming Day. I'm not sure who dictated that it was Tabletop Gaming Day, but...
Yeah, more the merrier.
Yeah, exactly. 29th of April, so we're going to smash out a tourney up there. I think we've hired out the entire hall, so we'll have a few other gaming systems and try to... preach the heresy to some of them and
yep.
convert them.
You will put your wafer in their mouth.
Indeed. That could be a metaphor. What? Maybe not.
I don't know what's wrong with me today. I'm sorry.
We are at a church too.
Yeah. Sick
man.
Yeah. So Brisky looks all right.
I think Brisky looks all right. I think, I don't know, based on what you've said and based, like, I haven't actually played her from an outside looking in. I like a versatile captain, and that's the only probably flaw I can see in her game. She looks like a shark to me.
Yeah, she's a bit shark-like.
You know, full-toed football. Unlike fish, she can actually take in new models that can kill other models.
See,
so
now,
maybe that's where it levels out.
Yeah, that's right. I think she still does have access to a 2-2.
Yeah.
Especially with that +1 VP on goals.
Yeah.
See,
you got to trigger that off the playbook, don't you?
You do.
That has to be done off the playbook.
Yeah. So... there's questions around how you set that up. What it also does is it means mascot takeouts are viable once you trigger it.
Yeah.
So that's pretty easy. And given the Union roster, the game I played, I ran Brisky, Coyne, Avarice and Greed, Harry, Mist, and Gutter.
Yep.
And Gutter was not the right pick. But I was playing into Mason, so I'm on an extra 2-inch melee just to fuck around with stuff.
Yeah.
But that lineup is highly capable of dealing enough damage to take a player out.
Yeah, I mean, Avarice and Greed on their own just surprise some people.
It's that Harry, Avarice and Greed combo, like the knockdown setup, and
it's not bad. It's not bad at all. So I was trying to think who else you would take. You take Gutter out, you're saying.
You know what? I'm thinking Snakeskin.
Snakeskin.
Yeah.
Snakers.
I'm thinking Snakers.
Especially when she's got that pass. Snakers is the best ball holder in the game, if you asked one Trenton Dennison.
Good old Dan.
Yeah. Which, you know, is a completely valid point too. So Snakers.
Yeah,
I like
just
that.
You pass the ball to Snakers, you get her upfield, you put clone on her, and then you trigger the pass from Snakers to Brisket.
Yeah.
And I reckon you do that as your last activation.
And you go end of one turn, top of the next turn.
Try and look for that.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then I don't think you're going to struggle killing two models at that point.
Yeah.
Interesting.
The more I play Snakers, the more I like her.
Yeah.
I'm sort of coming around to her. She's got a lot of kit.
She's pretty good. I think the one thing is just her playbook is a bit there, but I guess you're using her as a battery in this, aren't you? You know.
And yeah, she's a ball holder. She can put out a condition. She can put out poison. So you know, if something's low, she can throw out a cheeky poison at the end of turn. You know, that could be situationally useful.
That is brilliant.
I mean, really, it's like the thing I love about Union is it is such a broad toolkit. It's just about looking at the situation and applying it.
Yeah, so she makes Union 9, and then it's just a base, you know, a matter of, okay, who am I playing into, and what do I need to kind of whittle them down?
Yeah.
Nice.
Fish heavy meta.
It is. It smells like fish up there.
It does. I'm not saying it's easy. Like, I'm not saying it's easy to, like, take that team and win against fucking fish with their 2-inch melee.
No.
But I feel like you've got a chance.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that was another thing I looked at when I was picking a team that I thought would go into the fish. It's okay, yeah, how many 2-inch melee can I take? Colossus is a great one that he won't, you know, fish aren't going to try to take him out. Yeah, they can try to wrap off him and do that kind of thing, but he's, you know, armor 2, so the wrap's kind of off the table.
Yeah.
And he's got the 2-inch melee and the early knockdown and singled out.
But yeah.
What I also like about him is Hoist can steal the singled out.
Yes.
And so if you deletion tool up Hoist and overclock him instead of Pin Vice, you know, he's effectively getting 6 influence, and he does momentous, well, puts him up to momentous 3 on the 3 column.
Yep.
And if you get the single out on the first one, then hitting that with tax 7 is actually not that hard.
Yep.
So.
And you're playing a game of robot peekaboo. Like, where's the threat? Where's the threat coming from? Is exactly. It here? Is it here?
Exactly. And I think that's part of the art, or what I see is going to be the art to the NGs. It's not like you always go through that same pattern, like the Season 2 Obulus, you know, load up Obulus, do this, do that, control them this way. Like, I think it will be, these are the tools I've got. Hoist and Pin Vice are the damage dealers, you know, Colossus can be the ball holder or that
repositioner.
Reposition. I'll definitely try the old push someone off the board with him tonight.
Yeah.
And just understanding what each of them does, but what order you need to do them in, I reckon that's the trick, because you're with engineers, there's so much layering that you want to do, but there's a point at which it's actually just better to get the damage on, even if it's not going to be quite as much, if you're not going to get the deletion and the tooled up, that kind of thing.
Yeah, well, it's like, what does the activation cost me if I do it in the optimal way?
Yeah, because you project it. I mean, you put deletion overclock and tooled up on someone.
Yep.
Like, it's projected a mile away, and they gut and string and score a goal and dodge away. You know,
or they just move all their shit out of range. Yeah, right?
Exactly. And you just go, sad. So, no, it'll be good. I'm actually enjoying the NGs. The aesthetic. I've brought Locust. I'll probably rock out Locust in the second game. I don't think, man, he works into Fished as well as...
He is devastatingly handsome.
That is a wicked model. In fact, the newer models, the Season 3 models that have come out, are really nice sculpts.
They do look good.
Yeah.
I know he's made out of wood, but I'm the one who got a Woody. That's coming out in editing. That's fucking
that's gone,
wicked shit.
That's gone. nice one.
Yeah.
So it should be a good evening. We'll do a bit of a recap and see what happens. Hopefully I don't get completely towed and 12-0'd by Shark.
Nah, man. You'll at least go 12-something.
12-something.
Probably 12-8 if you're going to get fucked.
Yeah, Pin Vice has got the legendary turn. I did manage to miss a 5-dice shot with their last time I popped a legendary, which is, you know, just in line with the way I shoot goals.
Yep.
And then, you know, obviously, if Velocity's not playing, then Hoist will be that kind of secondary striker. So, yeah, no, it'll be good to see.
Yeah. NGs. I find people moving their models out of my threat range just to be a negative play experience.
It is.
What's that about?
Steamforge should do something about that.
It should.
I'm going to message Jamie about that.
They should sell, a compact, a retractable truncheon that you can smash your opponent's fingers with. No. Should call the truncheon no.
No. Brilliant. Yeah. Hey, I do have some, what I think is like super sweet Locust tech, because I was so disappointed when I messaged Jamie P and asked him if Locust could kick the ball from space back to himself, but because he's actually in possession of it, he can't actually do that. You can't kick to yourself.
Yeah.
But you can sprint or jog or move or whatever, kick it to space, and then when it's in space, if it's within 6 of you still, kick it from there. So it's like a threat range extension on a shot. Or you can just drop it within 1 inch, so then it's effective 2-inch distance, because 1 inch and then 1 inch for the actual ball marker,
yep,
and kick it from there. So he's actually got, I mean, you've got to spend 2 to do the kick,
but he's got like an 8-inch shot.
Damn.
Yeah. Or I was trying to work out the odds of kicking to space, and this is so situational, but if you put it within, I reckon, about 3 inches of him, then the deviations, and I need to measure this out, the deviations, as long as the distance is 3 or less, it should still be within 6 of him to then make a shot at goal.
Yep.
Yeah, so you can kind of work out the, you know, the max distance you want to be from goal to be able to do the drop ball and then kick the ball off the ground plane.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Shenanigans.
Shenanigans,
yeah. I like that.
Oh, man. I thought there had to be more to that, you know, his kicking ability.
Yep.
So, yeah.
It's good, Campbell. You went deep. You came out with the goods.
Came out with something.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I don't think you're going to get that as a shot at goal. There's usually a model around the goal. So, you know, if your first kick deviates onto them, then they're going to snap it, right?
But
you might get it to a snapshot situation.
Yeah. Or you can kick it to space in a way that your opponent hasn't been expecting.
Yeah.
You know, and then follow up. Like, it changes the traditional approach of, I guess, passing and kicking and moving. Makes it a little bit more unpredictable.
Well, you could, yeah, you do the pass first, and then you follow up move, and then kick it again. So yeah, that'd be interesting to see. I'll definitely try that in the second game. I think I have Terry as a catch up league game, so he's got a bit of hunter action.
Mm.
So I reckon that Locust might be good for that in terms of just moving them around and annoying the hunters. So.
Yeah, Locust could suck a bear in.
He could. He can. And knock the fucker down.
Yep.
Nice one.
All right.
Well, we're almost there.
Indeed.
Roll in, get our wafer and wine, and see what happens.
Yes. Yes, thank you, Padre. Back in the car.
It's late.
It's like we never left it.
It is.
Yeah, it's pretty late.
No, it's not too bad.
Pretty amped up, man. I made some nice chili crab pasta for dinner.
Oh,
yeah, nice. It's gourmet shit.
Yeah. What the fuck did we do? We did a carbonara. It wasn't my son's teacher told him you need to do a carb load because they've got, you know, the cross country on tomorrow.
Oh yeah.
I told, well, in a polite way, but I don't think a year 5 teacher should be giving kind of nutritional advice to a 10-year-old. So
yeah,
told
him
it wasn't necessarily that important.
Giving them nutritional advice is better than giving them heroin.
Yes, yes, that's valid.
On a sliding scale.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's pretty much the heroin cost, really, isn't it?
So you and I have both played into some Shark tonight.
Ah, love Shark, don't you? Yeah.
Shark is a fuckboy.
He is the fuckboy. Yeah, so I had my league game against Ellie, shout out to Ellie, and I played some NGs. I did my counter tech, which actually turns out it's pretty good.
Really?
Yeah, it's surprising. Surprising, I know. Target number 5 when shooting goals is a thing.
Wow.
So, yeah, I basically I took vet velocity, mother, pin vice, colossus, hoist and ratchet, and I was able to blow siren up first turn from range using AoEs because they don't target, which was, all the fun, happy times. And then he, got in, got a goal. I stuffed around with it for a bit, got a goal back. He did miss a few passes, to be fair. And this is probably the true value of NGs is therefore, the distances on the kicks aren't great, but they're 4 dice versus 3 dice on Mustard Fish.
Yep.
And Ellie missed a few in that first turn, which probably slowed down his first goal and, didn't set up that second turn. Shark legendary. So we grounded out for a bit, and then I ended one turn setting up, knowing I'd win the momentum race, setting up Colossus to come in, smack Shark once, push him off, and score the winning goal. So
very nice.
Yeah, it was
very nice.
12-4 in the end, I reckon.
So counter-tech, like vet velocity.
Vet velocity. I mean, you still miss velocity. Like, I won't deny that. There were a couple of times when I'm, measuring space and measuring things to see how close I can get to having a shot at goal, and I'm out by a bit.
Mm.
But pin vice does fill that gap pretty well. She can get the extra range on her own sprint. So vet velocity, I feel the target number, it either forces them to get in tap-in range, which is easier to defend. You can
still tap in at four as well.
So at four, well, in terms of the 4-inch range, so yeah, you could tap in at four, absolutely. Yeah,
target number, tap in four. That's, yes. Yeah.
And you can put mother's nests out, right?
Ah, so sneaky.
you can mess with lines that way. And I had a couple out. He managed to get in around one of them. But there's just other ways to kind of mess with how many dice they're going to be rolling.
So, yeah.
No, it was good. I think Colossus is a good counter into Shark. I 2-inch melee, especially. Close control, so, you know, burns a little bit of influence. And because I made sure I blew Siren up early, that he couldn't, you know, get the seduced off.
Yep.
Yeah. That all kind of went... You know, went to plan.
Yeah, Siren's pretty key, isn't she?
Yeah.
You know, she's like definitely the one of the two keystones in that Shark team.
Well, it just takes all the other models need to tackle you or do something to you, whereas she can, you know, just do it from range, right? And as soon as you take that off the board, then it's a lot easier to defend against.
Three dice play with Seduced as well is, you know, like you're probably going to jag a five.
Yeah.
You know, it's five or a six.
Yeah, it makes it hard to hold the board, so.
Yep.
And I probably could have blown her up at the end too, because I don't think Ellie healed her. Can't remember. Anyway, the goal was for the win, so.
Yeah.
No, it's good. Sad. Yours going to roll out.
Well, new player, so I gave a demo game.
Yes.
Teaching the fundamentals of Guild Ball, spreading the love.
Yeah, that was good.
All about spreading the love tonight, Campbell.
It is all about the love. Spreading something.
Yeah, nice dude. Jed.
Yep, Jed. Yeah. We'd got a message from him. He was looking for some games, so yeah. Told him to come up, and he rocked on in and smashed out.
So we played a 3-on-3. I just kind of showed him how Shark rolled out, how to score goals and, you know, steal daughters and wreck lives and whatever.
Gunstring everything.
He's played a lot of games, so, you know, like Infinity and, you know, X-Wing and shit like that. So he's all over it. Picked it up really quickly. Lovely bloke. Turns out we know people. You know, we have friends in common, so, yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, I seemed like a nice guy. We had a quick little game after as well, did a 3-on-3, and he knew what he was doing, given, you know, he'd only played that one game against you.
Well, I'm an excellent instructor, Campbell.
You are.
I can tell people where to go, like, so well, man.
So you're suggesting he's not coming back?
No, he'll come back. Good dude. Yeah, then I played Ellie. He wanted a game, and I played some Brisky. Some seasoned brisket.
Seasoned brisket, nice.
Yeah, it was interesting. Like, so I played seasoned brisket, coin, Harry, Aberson, Greed, Mist, and Snakers.
Ah, nice.
So he kicked off to me with Shark. Like, he won, elected to kick off, which I think is probably the right play with Shark.
Yeah.
Because Shark, as I've said, wrecks dreams and steals daughters. And I retrieved the ball with Snakers. I gave her three. Went in there, just grabbed the ball, held it, didn't pass it back to anybody, just put up Nimble and Clone.
Nice.
Shark's got six, comes in, charges, triggers, he had 10 dice, he got 1-6, so he triggered the clone.
Yeah.
Then I dodged 2 inches back towards my line, just sitting there at def 6, and he proceeded to whiff 2 more attacks.
Yeah.
I think 2, 4, 6. No, whiffed 1 more, and then he title searched back because he realized the goal was off.
Yeah.
Sounds like counter tech to me.
Sounds pretty good.
Yeah.
Snakers is a thing.
I mean, it's a bit of like just dangler out there and hope, but I still think if the alternative is passing back into your lines and letting Shark come in and tackle something, fuck man, I'd rather bleed the influence and stop him from getting the goal, you know, on average than not.
Yeah, absolutely. There's also a distance thing there too. Like, you know, you're out a bit further. He's not coming, you know, as far up to get that first, you know, attack. So he's got to get a lot more dodges off.
Yeah.
Or he's got to trigger the title surge, do something, or spend 3 on the title surge to get in goal range.
Yep.
So it poses that interesting problem.
I mean, the flip side was then, like, I probably made a mistake at this point. I had the ball still on Snakers, and I should have gone with Brisket and forced her to pass the ball, got a dodge, and probably got a goal off that activation. Because instead, what I did is move up Mist, who had no influence on him. We dicked around, he moved Siren in next, and jagged the 5 on the Seduced and took the ball off her, made her pass the ball.
Yeah.
So that's cool, what it means is Shark didn't get his first turn goal because, like, he forced Snake has to pass to Shark. So Shark's sitting there with a stranded ball, and I think that's probably a mistake. Like, he should have passed to Siren, and then Siren dropped the ball.
Or even, yeah. Is it a pass or a kick?
I think it's a pass, man.
Pass, so you can't just kick the space.
Okay. Yeah. But that's okay. So Shark's sitting there, and, like, we move shit around, and, like, my next significant play was, like, sending up Brisket. So she sprints, and then she's 6 inches away from Shark with the ball. So she, like, uses her character play to make the jog.
Yeah.
So I've spent three. Attack, nothing. Attack, tackle, momentous. Single dodge.
Yeah.
I'm in goal range. 2-dash shot on goal. 1-1.
Oh,
missed it.
Boo.
But, yeah, no, it was fun. Like, it was a fun play seeing how far she could get up the board.
And she's pretty mobile then.
Yeah.
1-1. 1-1.
What did I need to hit? What's her target number? Like,
3.
It's
just God. 1-1.
It's so bad.
That's brutal.
Yep. I'm just shit at rolling dice.
Oh, my word.
But the game rolled out, man. Like, I did manage to get a goal with Mist at the start of the next turn. So I got up to 4. He counterscores. I park the ball at that point and kill somebody. And then, yeah, anyway, like, it went back and forth. I think I finished up the game, like, 14-8.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so but one takeout, 3 goals.
A matter of that, getting that timing and that tempo, knowing that, yeah, every time you feed him back the ball, he's generally going to score assist the Shark way.
Just making it hard for him. Like, yeah. I think with Shark, it's about, like, it's almost like counting off the models you need to go and then jamming activations until you can use your critical model at the right time.
Absolutely. Yeah, I found that happened in our game as well, where we were both kind of looking at each other, knowing, okay, well, you're looking to do that. I'll, you know, do this, or I'll just, you know, I'll derp around with Vet Velocity and Mother and just throw out another, you know, nest and that kind of style for you. And then at the end, then I know I can, you know, drop the ball here, snap it, you know, kick over there kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, Shark. Being the Shark kind of guy.
Oh, man, I did pull an Avarice and Greed goal as well. So, one Brisket. Hang on. Yeah, I think Brisket did get one in the end. Avarice and Greed got
you're
one.
You're on 10, you got a 14 with a goal, yeah.
Yeah, and then and Mist got the winner at the end. So Avarice and Greed.
They play a good footballing, like, style of game, then, the season Brisket?
Yeah, it's good football. I think you can switch it up and go for the takeout. You know, maybe a takeout with, like, Harry, Avarice and Greed, even Brisky at a pinch if you really need to, just to close out the damage on something. But yeah, she's really flexible, really, really manoeuvrable. Basically wanting to make a whole bunch of pass dodges to get her move, or yeah, you can use a legendary to jump her around a bit, which is good. But yeah, I don't know, man. Like, 2 games in, I still like that 2-inch melee on Blackheart.
Yeah, I think, and that's one of the takeaway messages, isn't it? It's something I found, like, you know, having Colossus in my game. 2-inch melee is huge. Like, at the end of ours, where I was lining up, right, I'm probably going to win the momentum race. I can pass. I had Ratchet with the ball, last activation of the turn. Do I pass to Hoist or Colossus? And I was trying to line up, okay, well, who's going to be able to get in on someone? And I started looking at who I could get in on. Fish basically all have 2-inch melees, and so I was better off going with Colossus, where I can at least charge a model and then push them off and stay at that full 2 inches. Whereas Hoist's got to go a lot further to get out of their, you know, their melee. And of course, you know, Colossus has close control, you know, another great like counterpiece that when you go in on a fish model and they counterattack, they can't steal the ball off you.
Yeah.
So yes, it's handy. 2-inch melee.
2 armor's nice.
2 armor, it's very nice. Yeah, had a few times like that. I think Gally counted and it's like 2 armor, and then I'm in cover, so it's one less dice. And yeah, he's pretty good. I think I see Colossus similar to Vet Cat in you just got to be smart about how you play them and make sure they don't get farmed. Because that's the biggest issue. The 2 armor helps you not give up the wraps as easily as Vet Catalyst does.
Yeah, but once he's knocked down, crowded out.
Yeah, shit doesn't matter. It's still that one more than Vet Cat's got, and he just dies very quickly. So no, he's a good piece. I like him. He's got a whole bunch of text on the back of his card, so it must be good for something.
Yeah. It's good for helping you with your dyslexia, man.
Yeah. No, not at all.
Tiny. Well, I'm going to keep playing. I'll keep playing Season Brisket. She's pretty interesting. She's like fun, you know? Yeah. I love those kind of like dynamic players that ping around the board.
Yeah.
That's fun.
And that's kind of why we play the game. I mean, you know, that's where we're shark. You can see the appeal that a lot of people have to playing like a shark game or a Midas game where it's just go, 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 and you can retrieve the ball a lot easier. So, it's good. Play her, work out the optimal kind of list. I like that you've played a bit of Snakeskin too.
I like Snakeskin. Yeah, the more I play her, the more I like her. Like, I don't know that she goes into every team, but as a sideboard piece, like, I don't think I'd leave home without her now.
There you go.
Tackle dodge results are amazing.
Yeah. That's why I like Venom so much. Yeah. Tackle dodge, goal. Thank you very much. Manage range is so good.
Shadow like, clone, nimble.
Ugh.
I don't know. The more I look at a card, I'm like, this is a lot of good stuff.
I think they are getting a lot more depth, though, in players, like, you know, traits and things like that. It is making the game more complex. Like, you know, as Steamforged do strive to come up with new rule sets or new mechanics, we are getting this breadth of kind of rules. And there might be a point at which they have to kind of dial that down or, you know, do a bit of a, you know, this rule is similar to that one and they need to be the same. But I like the sweet spot we're in at the moment where there's enough that, you know, Stoic's different to Sturdy and just subtle differences that are great ways of getting around specific, you know, great counters to every kind of player and rule.
Yeah.
Love it.
Definitely do not feel like Shark is unbeatable. I think he's always going to be a hard match, but if you can keep him at 8, then you've probably done most of your job.
Yeah, and it's like you've always said, it's a tempo kind of game.
Mm.
You know, you really just got to pick when you're actually pinging goals and try not to get legendaried on too bad. Oh, I got the worst legendary. You got my entire team.
Ish.
Yeah, I was able to, I guess with engineers, you know, the good counter is that you can still throw AoEs, and I knew it was coming turn 2, so I made sure that Hoist was within 4 of Ratchet so I could steal the Blast Earth if I needed to, and then made sure Mother could throw out a nest for Hoist if I wanted to do the, you know, jumping in and doing that. In fact, I ended up using the Legendary with Pin Vice, went in on Shark to do a bit of damage and kind of mess him up, and then I passed off to Hoist knowing that he couldn't get the ball, and then because I'd legendaried, I put all the oil tokens on everyone. And I set about, in Hoist's turn, using that to ping around and just generate a heap of momentum.
Yep.
I was going to try to set up a goal, but Ellie's counter move was to put both Jack, or he already had Jack there, but put Siren kind of in the way where I couldn't get decent pass dodges all the way through to the goal.
Oh, yeah.
It was a good kind of momentum generator. I think I got to about 10 that turn just by all the oil token passes.
Gonna have to play some Pin Vice, man.
It's just good. And welcome back. That was another good episode. I'm glad we've kind of got back on the bicycle. We're riding it again. I'm riding some engineers. There's, you know, a little bit of cog action going there. I like it. What do you think of it, Dave?
I'm glad to be back from the dead, Campbell.
Yes.
There are a couple of comments on social media that I noticed that sort of indicated that we may have dropped off the perch.
Yeah, well, you know, we made it further than some podcasts. And, real life does actually get in the way at some point, so there's the point at which we've got to earn the money that pays for our lives and not just have fun, you know, crapping on about Guild Ball.
Yeah, that's right. Actually, making this thing is it's more work than I really anticipated at the start, but I'm glad we're doing it. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, to be honest, I'll take this on-air opportunity to thank you for all the time that you actually do editing. I know I say obviously that many times that you know the waveform of the word obviously out of my mouth, so I'll just say obviously one more time. Thanks.
Yeah, and I'd like to take this opportunity to thank you for your tolerance when I'm fighting with Americans on Twitter.
I just like getting the popcorn and just watching. It's entertainment for me.
Yeah, and sorry to that dude that I called a cock juggler.
I missed that one. Oh, it's far out.
Probably not for the best.
No worries. So have we got any shout-outs we need to do at the end of the episode?
Australian Nationals.
Indeed, indeed.
It looms ever closer.
So Oz Nats, we're trying to get that to our 32-man tournament. As part of that, we're trying to enable it by throwing out a free stubby holder to any of the pre-reg people. So it's basically $10 less if you actually sign up before the end of and then insert whatever Matt says about when the end is, because I actually don't know when the pre-reg ends. But we'll also give you a free stubby holder. We've just had some choo-choo motherfucker ones printed in honor of the world champ. So that's Australian Nationals, 26th and 27th of August, 3D6 in Canberra. If you don't know, find out from your local pundit or our good mate Matt Graham.
Yeah, big shout out to Matty. Yes, as always, Big Daz, what a man. Yes,
he is the enabler.
We were bonding over our mutual love of Dark Souls the other day.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, he likes a strength-faith build. I don't know, man. Oh. I'm trying it out. We'll see where it goes.
Did you guys get nude at the end of this conversation, or was it, you know, did you have a hug? Or was there some kind of, was it that level of bonding?
We already talked about grease and oil and lube, so.
Yeah, okay, sorry. We've gone too far. Yeah. Apologies for that. I'll also do a quick plug for a local tournament we're doing. I think it's World Board Gaming Day, or maybe it's just Australian Board Gaming Day. Any excuse to play, tabletop game. 29th of April, we're having Blessing of the Scumfather number 2 up at Harlequin Halls, 29th of April. And, yeah, we're going to smash that out. It'll probably be, you know, not a huge tournament, but we'll get all the locals in. Daz will sponsor it because he's just a fucking legend. And everyone will go away with a mini, I'm guaranteeing that. So, yeah, it'll be really good.
Nice one. That's great. Mm-hmm. That's really good. Yeah, I'd like to throw a big shout-out to the Steamforge social media team. I feel bad for the dudes who have to wade through that sometimes. Like, you can just imagine the look on their faces when they read some of it.
Yeah,
I'm going to make a solemn pledge to clean up my act. Not post on the forums anymore. Be nice to people. Positive. Forward-looking. Grow this beautiful game. Because it is a beautiful game. For all the shit people throw around, like, Guild Ball is an amazing game. And it's made and it is kept up to date by people who really care about it. And I think it's really important to remember. Like, we've got a good thing here.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. Yeah, I think it's fantastic. Although I did see, you know, some salt on the forums. But just try not to be so salty on the forums, people. Like, you know, there are things that are good. There are things that, you know, need tuning. But rest assured that Steamforged are always on top of that, and it's Jamie P's job to keep it balanced. So if you've got any complaints, just message him in the middle of the night, and he'll be more than happy with a young child and the family to be telling you to get fucked.
Yes, yeah. Mm. Well, too much stress is never enough.
No, absolutely.
Yeah, so...
Nice one.
That brings us to the end of another episode.
Yeah, well done. We've got another one lined up pretty soon. We've got a few tidbits there that'll be interesting. We might get some Tobias Ford action and record that episode again, so we might do that.
Yeah, he's a bit sad, man. He mentioned it to me the other day. He's like, what did I do? Why do you guys not want me on?
Yeah, it was, you know, we'll just keep telling it's his internet connection. We won't tell him the truth.
Yeah. Yeah, the truth is out there, man.
Well, on that note, I reckon that's another episode of Double Dodge.
Listen to your heart when he's calling for you. Listen to your heart. There's nothing else you can do. I don't know where you're going, and I don't know why. But listen to your heart before.
I'm Ricky Bobby.
And I'm Cal Naughton Jr.
We just want to take a moment to talk to you about snow blindness in cats. It's affecting more and more cats every year, and it scares the living shit out of us.